While the Monocle Weekly takes a temporary break, we're still bringing you interviews with some of the leading lights in art and culture from around the world. Today, Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco talks to Donny Benet, an Australian singer whose new album, Mr. Experience, has been described as the soundtrack to a dinner party in the late 1980s. Very much Fernando's cup of tea.
Donny Benet, a pleasure having you here on Monocle 24. I have to say, I love your music, so it's lovely talking to you. But first of all, for those who perhaps don't know much about your career, how would you describe your music? Because it's such a lovely mix of genres.
That's always the hardest question, but I'll try my best. For me, I guess it's kind of like, this is a very generalized description, but it's fun. There's lots of elements, yacht rock, tower disco, funk, kind of blended them. They're all my favorite kinds of music. And just blended them into something that I enjoy performing and writing for. So, and usually people that come to shows have a lot of fun.
I adore Italo Disco. And I was reading, is it true that your father was somehow involved with the movement?
I come from a family of musicians. I come from the era of MySpace, the very beginning. And everybody would have a very ironic bio. And that was my ironic bio. And it stuck. It's half true because I do have a father who was a musician. My grandfather was a piano accordionist as well. I did play piano accordion myself. And he wasn't a pioneer of a Italo disco accordion, but he was involved in music quite a lot.
And it's interesting, I mean, again, your music could be described as ironic as well. But funnily enough, I don't read sometimes all the irony because I actually love the beat. Do you think your new work, Mr. Experience, perhaps there's a little bit less of this irony and maybe kind of other elements to your music as well?
Definitely, yeah. My first album started off back in 2011, which was called Don't Hold Back. Very improvised, and there was a lot of irony in the character because, you know, around the time I was like this balding middle-aged guy in a music scene that was full of kind of like really beautiful looking male dreamy shoegaze singers, and so that was the ironic part there. And it seemed quite funny for someone like me to be singing, you know, songs about love and romance. And over the years it's kind of evolved. I'm still very much, I don't take myself too seriously, as in that I'd like to laugh at myself, but the music's always been a very serious element. And by the time I've gotten to Mr. Experience, it is a lot more, I think there is actually, the irony somewhat has dropped, but there's, I think, some more beautiful messages in it that I feel, like I felt that it would be hard to continue down this path of ironic, satirical music. There's still elements of that there, and I think it's quite clever to try and weave that in your music, because I think music and humor are two things that mix well, but the music's always got to be very serious. And as you mentioned, like I'm a bass player by trade. That's kind of my main strength. And bass lines and the drum patterns that I program are very much the focal point of the music. So it steers it away a bit from that ironic satirical point. He's the kind of guy that'll make you eggs. Cook 'em up nice. When you need the one who will deliver it, you know you've got to call Mr. Experience. There is no questioning. The satisfaction with someone so confident, Mr. Experience. When I'm listening to Mr. Experience, your new album, it's very funny because it seems like it's made for a dinner party set in the 80s. I mean, with all the synthesizers. Was that your intention as well? Is that where you want to take us? It's almost like an escapist place. For me, I try and make the music escapist because I have big plans and big dreams in my head, and I want to kind of get everybody dreaming and thinking as well in that way. But with this album, I was not struggling with the theme, but after The Don, I had songs like Santorini and Konnichiwa, and they were pretty big songs, and they're very hard songs to top. The Don, the album, kind of had a theme as well. It was this brash guy in his mid-30s. It was a bit of a Casanova, and, you know. And The Don was, I'm heading towards 40, so The Don was something I had to be able to perform as a 40-year-old every night and be happy with it. So I kind of headed in that direction. And then I started listening a lot to artists like Robert Palmer and Brian Ferry and Todd Rundgren as well. And they were kind of this very sophisticated 40-year-old I felt like, and there's one Bryan Ferry album in particular from about 1986 that it seemed so unpopular. I couldn't think of any setting that anyone would listen to besides being like an Upper East Side dinner party full of intellectuals or something like that. So I thought that's cool. Like, and I was talking to a friend saying, I really like this Bryan Ferry album, but man, like he must have sold a very small amount of copies of it. But I'm really into it. And my friend's like, yeah, that's great. You know, I was like, it's something you'd play at a dinner party. So once that kind of idea got in my head, I was like, well, yeah, like I'm that age. I have dinner parties with my friends. You know, we come over, we don't get blind drunk, but we have a bit of conversation, a bit of fun, you know. So I thought that would be a good setting to kind of explore.
I think your music, for some reason, from what I know from that country, but it would work very well in Japan for some reason. I think they love a little bit city pop and kind of quite charming as well in a way. So would you say so? Do you have many fans in Japan?
Well, funnily enough, I adore Japan. I think I've been there 5 or 6 times. One of my closest friends, I went to university with, and he's now based in Tokyo. He's a jazz musician. And I just love going there. And there's a really famous record shop there. And I got this email the other day, basically from this company saying they'd like to release Konnichiwa on a 7-inch. And I just got so excited, which means that Japan's one of those places where like you can't say, I want to come and play in Japan. You have to wait to be asked. And I think that I've been given the key to the city. So I'm really, really, really excited about it. So I can't wait. Konnichiwa.
That's fantastic. And Donny as well, I mean, as a musician, of course, your new album is out now, but you know, you were supposed to be in Europe, you know, performing. How did COVID-19 affected you as a musician? Because it is difficult times, I mean, because a lot of people, live performances are so important for the music industry and maybe for yourself as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I had this huge year planned and I was, of course, devastated. There was lots of artists much larger than me in the same position. I really admire Thundercat and I think he did one show and he had this massive tour that was going to sell out through the US and he did one show and that's it. They had to pull the plug. And I know like bands like Tame Impala, I don't even think got to do a show. So there's like affected performers in that way. And releasing a record might seem a bit crazy to do when you can't tour it. But in my mind, I'd built up this momentum by touring the last few years. And to kind of all of a sudden pull the plug and wait till we can go out and tour again would just absolutely kill all the momentum. And also there's, you know, I think people are very starved for new music at the moment. So I've got ahead with it. And I hope we can tour when we can tour next year. I was doing some live stream Instagram concerts just to stay connected to fans. And also that helped promote the new record coming up. So if anything, in a bizarre way, COVID has built my audience, probably not as much as it would have had I been on tour, but you have to make lemons with lemonade. But I know it's funny. I was speaking to some, it's, you know, pretty devastating also for all the other behind the scenes people in the music industry, sound engineers, stage hands, venues, and that's all starting to slowly sink in. So yeah, it's going to be a long haul, I think. And I'm also pretty burnt out from, I don't think I could write another album at the moment. That's probably the last thing. I'm really itching to get out and perform. One thing we're going to do is record and video a live performance of the new album because fans in Europe and America, we're not going to see them for a while. So I've been starting to plan that and I was playing the new album last night. I was practicing it with the bass guitar and singing and I was just getting so excited. So I really can't wait to get up and play again.
Let's let's talk about the album. So, I mean, it's full of excellent tracks. Of course, the first one, Mr. Experience. But I also love, funnily enough, I don't like Negronis, but I love Negroni Summer. It's such a cool track. So tell us, do you have any favorite track from the album?
Yeah, well, Negroni Summer is one of my favorites. Funnily enough, that was one of the hardest ones to write because how I compose with the instrumental first, I usually start from the bass guitar and the drum patterns and build up from that. And so Negroni Summer, I'd written this track and it sounded like Michael McDonald or Steely Dan. I was like, yes, this is like, it's not a ripoff, but it's like, you know, it's, and this song would be so fun to play live. But it took so long for me to get the lyrics and the content of the song. I kept on putting it aside and I'll come back to it. I knew that I had it in the bank. So when I got to the last stage of writing, I kind of had to get this song done. And I think it had about four or five different sets of lyrics to it, which is really weird. Not because the other lyrics were bad, but they were too similar to the songs I'd written before. And I was really trying hard to not repeat myself from albums like The Don. So, but it turned out great. And the instrumental Waterfall, the last one, I love that. That wrote itself in about half an hour. And there was this weird moment where I was thinking if it was 2020, and somebody released a new record and it had a huge fretless bass solo, I'd think that would be a really huge move. And so I was like, well, why don't I do that? I can be the guy that puts the fretless bass solo on an album in 2020. So that was really exciting for me to kind of have the courage and the conviction to kind of put my money where my mouth is and go, you know what? Here's the last track. It's an instrumental. It's almost like a love scene kind of song. I really liked One Night in Paradise. You Don't Need Love's one of my favorites. That came from, I played a show in Hamburg. I went for a little walk afterwards along the shore, along the water. And there was like a bar and there were these two German guys closing up and they had Self-Control, the Laura Branigan cover, the real Italo disco one with that bass. And, you know, they're like typical German guys. They were like sitting there smoking and just like, yeah, this is cool. Because I was near the water and it was kind of reverberating everywhere. And it just sounded so good. I was like, man, that's such a good song. Just that whole, that real Italo sound. And I didn't purposely go out to write a song like that, but started to write One Night in Paradise. And it reminded me of Self-Control. I was like, that's kind of cool. So
that's a good comparison.
So, I mean, I always try and write. I'm very, very particular with how I go about composing and putting songs on the album. So I think I wrote about 35 to 40 tracks for this album. And 30 of them ended up in a reject folder. And reason being is that I have to play it every night at a show. So like the tour I'd be on at the moment, I think it was 14 shows in 16 days. So when you're touring that, when it's that intense, if you've got some kind of bum songs in your set, you really get sick of them quickly. So that was one of the first criteria, was like, I have to play these songs every night. And the second one was like, would I want to hear this song? So I actually like listening to the album at the moment. So it's really good, which I think being that picky in particular lends itself to that.
And what I love about your music, I mean, you're also a very kind of visual artist. I mean, you have amazing video clips and a great dress sense. I mean, our listeners can't see you, but, you know, it's very cool. I mean, there's an effortless cool in there as well.
I'm very lucky with my videos. I work with a lot of great directors. One thing I've learned about myself being, creative, is that it's always hard when somebody has an idea in their head and they want you to execute that idea, but you never quite hit the mark because you don't know what they're thinking. So when it comes to video clips, I learned this very quickly. One of the first clips I did, Sophisticated Lover, I had no idea. Somebody picked me up at 5 a.m. on a Saturday morning and the clip just told me what to do. And so from that, I learned whenever you work with a director that you really admire, and then just say, look, I give them the song and I say, just give me a treatment, go to town, whatever you want to do. And I just try not to get involved too much in the creative process because it clouds their vision. Of course, there's like elements where I'll improvise or have to act in them, but I'm just lucky. Like, they do such fantastic jobs. Like, Alex Smith is the director I work with quite a lot, who did Konnichiwa, Girl of My Dreams, Second Dinner, and also another track with Kieran Jake Allen, which is called The Edge. And they just look fantastic. So very, very lucky to have great people to work with.
Listen, Donnie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for chatting.
Thanks for having me, Fernando.
Our thanks to Donnie Bonet and of course to Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and Donnie's new album, Mr. Experience, is out now. The Monocle Weekly is on a temporary break, but keep an eye on our website for interviews with leading figures from culture from around the world. I've been Augusto Macellari, our studio manager was May Lee Evans. Until next time, goodbye.